Hey everyone, welcome to Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. The reason I started this podcast was growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort. Without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music. Oh, another reason you should connect with Nikki, because kitten teeth.
I saw that she said cat dad in her bio, and I was like, okay, this girl's legit. Let's get to know her.
Yeah, she's awesome. And I'm taking these off
because.
Before I get started, something very cool I want to talk about. Brittany here is going to be live streaming on December 19th at 6 p.m. to raise money and awareness for a Seattle-based nonprofit, Abundance of Hope. Their mission is to provide equitable, culturally responsive, holistic, and person-centric homelessness prevention for our most at-risk youth. So be sure to tune in. So now, let's get to it. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast is an insanely talented vocalist, singer-songwriter, producer, and multi-instrumentalist. Inspired by her desire to help others explore their emotions and a love for singing, she dove headfirst into the music realm, and about halfway through her journey to a math degree, actually pivoted to a bachelor's in music production and engineering from the Berklee College of Music, which I'm very excited to talk about. I could go on about her musical prowess, but really you owe it to yourself to check out the string of covers she's been rolling out, from Ariana Grande to Billie Eilish, which really demonstrate her uncanny ability to deliver a real lived sound. So without further ado, please welcome a world traveler, true one-woman production team, from the music to the album art, the front woman of Turtleneck, Brittany Rogers.
What an introduction. Hi there, Duncan.
Hello. I'm so excited to sit down with you. Before we dive into all the great stuff you're doing, do you mind walking me through like what your introduction to music was? I know that's so nebulous, but when did you first realize that you loved music?
Well, when I was really bad at it and was, you know, making the neighbor's dog bark, their words, not mine.
No way.
Yeah. And I would like have my friends over for singing competitions, like Simon Cowell, you know, we'd do the whole thing. And yeah, I was like, people would say, please don't do that singing thing, but
no way.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Just hearing you sing now, it's like very hard to believe that someone would be like, yeah, she's bad. So bad that the dog is going off.
Yeah, and I don't even think they were trying to be mean. I think they just wanted the dog to stop barking.
Yeah. They're like, it's become a problem for everybody.
Yeah, it's like we should really calm this down, neighbor. Yeah. That was my introduction, but you know, it just goes to show that if you love something enough, you can put the work in and make something happen. So,
yeah. So are you completely self-taught then? Or for how long did you go just singing because you loved it until you had some sort of formal training, I guess?
Yeah. Well, I still remember like high school, you know, you're given money for clothes by your parents.
Mm-hmm.
I just bought a guitar instead.
Nice.
And I owed $5 and the guy was really nice. It was like an $85 guitar and I had 80.
Oh.
And he was like, come back with $5. And I mean, looking back, that's super cool.
For real.
Like that's, I feel like that's a real, you know, that's like the heart and soul of a music store right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I just kind of dinked around on YouTube videos and tried to teach myself my favorite covers and like tried out for every talent show at high school and just kept doing it. So it was until I guess I tried to do lessons once in a while, but it never felt like the right fit. And I felt like people only saw me where I was, but I had this vision of where I could go.
Mm-hmm.
So I would literally just listen to my favorite artists. And then I'd take a video of myself, like literally watch myself singing it. And I would cry because it was bad. Like, it was really bad. And I wanted to sing really good and I couldn't do it. And so I was like, okay, not yet. So I would keep going like endlessly until I would match the tone and the pitch. And then I would like try to match the dynamics and did that for a long time.
Literally film study. You took like the sports methodology and applied it to music.
Yeah. I was like, no one's going to tell me I can't do this thing that I know I'm like supposed to do. So
were you into sports at all growing up?
I was, yeah.
Okay. So do you think that influenced your just drive?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I feel like with music and like art in general, I kind of feel like, and I'm not sure if this is true, but this is just a suspicion that like artists feel the human condition more than most. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure to some degree, there's just this like longing for something, some nebulous, to use your great vocabulary over here, some nebulous thing, a search for identity, a search for self, trying to connect with something that is just like too deep to explain. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of at the root of it is probably what drives mostly all art, in my opinion. But yeah, I don't know, for me at least.
Do you think the driver for pursuing music as intensely as you did was that you connected with these songs on a really deep level and wanted to do them justice? Or was it that you wanted to achieve the greatness of these heroes that you had, or was a little bit of both?
Okay, so I always think about it like a language. Mm-hmm. So if you speak your, like, whatever your first language is, you're speaking it fluently. And not because you sat down and practiced English from like a young age. For me, English is my first language. It's because you're surrounded by masters. There's a bunch of people around you speaking it fluently. And it can be frustrating, say if you have to learn a whole new language, maybe you're a teenager and you're in Spanish for the first time or whatever. It's frustrating to learn a new language and you're going to start off as a beginner where there's other people who speak fluently. And there will always be somebody who can speak it better, or who even know like the spicy vocab words to make it sound nice and make it sound poetic. So I guess my goal was always just like, I feel like singing is such a powerful, like I'll sing badly sometimes, even when I can't sing something yet, I will sing it badly just because I need to let it go. Like I need to let it out. And so I just want to learn the language fluently enough. My goal is to learn the language so fluently, I don't have to think about it and I can just express.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. It's beautiful. So were you, when you were playing these songs, did you know that you wanted to write, or when did writing come into play?
Yeah, I think writing was always like, it just happened. Mm-hmm. You know, people who write music, they gotta write them, you know, like it, even if it's bad, right? You don't have to make a masterpiece, but you just have something to say and you have to let it out. And so I think as soon as I had a guitar, actually before I had a guitar, I wrote my first song without a guitar and then wrote the guitar to it later so that I could sing it with something. So
you just did full melody. Mm-hmm. And were you just memorizing it then?
Yeah, like write it down and then you memorize the melody. Yeah.
That's awesome. I would try to do the same, but would always forget. And I didn't know how to like notate vocals or whatever. So I would try to write to a guitar and it was just a mess. And I got very frustrated with that. So I'm very keen on being able to like recall all that stuff.
That's the day before voice memos, right?
Yeah, like gosh. I love voice memos. It's my favorite invention. Yeah. Did you just dive in head first? And was it writing all the time? Or was it when inspiration struck? Or what did that foyer into like writing look like?
I think before I got into any technical aspect of music, writing was really easy for me in that I wasn't overthinking anything. Like there's this quote, like four chords and the truth or whatever. But honestly, there is something really mystical and beautiful about being able to say something simply in a way that a lot of people can understand. That's why pop is so brilliant. But yeah, then I got really into production. And I guess when you get better at the things that you were starting out with, then you understand how bad it was. I don't, bad's a bad word because it's not bad. It's all beautiful. Like the journey is beautiful, right? But I mean, when you're thinking objectively, like about pitch, like the objective measurable things, you look back and you're like, oh dear God. And, I think it affects your ability to be open. So I think a big thing for me in the last year is just like letting down my guards with perfectionism, which gets us right. Mm-hmm. It gets the average artist, I think, pretty hard.
Yeah. I feel it big time. I feel like before I understood everything, I was writing so much all the time, and now that I do understand some of the, I guess like you were saying, the more objective stuff, when I go listen back, I'm like, oh, this was bad because I didn't hit all this. Probably not a good song. You mentioned going into production. Were you producing before you went to school for it, or when did that come into play? What inspired you to do the engineering side of the house?
That's a great question, and it kind of just made a light bulb in my head because I hadn't really thought of that before. But yeah, I was doing my math degree, and I went into a vocal jazz group to which I did not sing at all at any of the shows. I showed up and I lip synced because I was too nervous to actually sing.
No way.
Yeah, true story. So sorry, Mr. Almy, if you're listening. But he probably knew because, you know, there's the outboard gear. They saw there was no signal coming in, which is right. So funny. So that's good. yeah. I was going to school and I was like, okay, I want to take electives. And usually I exhausted actually all of the math. I did all of the math, like there was no more math classes left to take at that point.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I was like, okay, let's take music. Let's do some sort of like, I don't know, jazz choir. And then I've never been in a choir, and let's do, I don't know. What's audio engineering? Okay. I'll just go in there. And audio engineering is like the bridge, like the very literal bridge. I think there's a lot of parallels in music, but that's like, to me, it's like such a literal bridge to math and music and art. And, I don't know. I didn't know what the frick I was doing, but I was like, I'm going to try this anyways. And it was really fun. And so I kept that in the back of my mind. And then after I had gone traveling for a bit and stuff, and I stopped my math degree, and I realized like, oh, that might be the answer. If I can, like, since I have an affinity for math and I love music and I'm not like so talented that I could stand up on stage and be like, yep, let's sign that girl. I was like, maybe this will be the bridge until I can get to where I want to go to performance wise.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be a means to an end and not the end itself.
Right.
Yeah. Which is obviously not what ended up happening, but.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome though. So you recognize that. And I think you mentioned beforehand, it was while you were abroad that you recognized kind of everything was pointing back to music. Was that, am I recalling that correctly?
Yeah. I always like when you obsess the thing you obsess over, right? I have this, like, maybe this is a naive belief, but it's so strong and it's driven me this far. And if you heard what I was singing 3 years ago, you would laugh your ass off. So I promise. Like,
same.
Yeah. No, I heard you. You have stuff on the internet and it's good. So
oh, thank you.
Have to say, plug in Duncan over here. DFI. Wait, am I saying that right?
Yes, you are. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Very exciting. I was like, wow, I really just could have messed that up pretty bad. Yeah, I was traveling, and okay, so a really funny story. I was in Thailand and I was there for a couple months, and I got some of my money fell out somewhere along the way. So I had like all this money saved, and I had planned it out pretty meticulously, and so that I could survive, you know, those things. And I had run out of money basically by the end, and I had no way back unless I could, you know, I could ask my mom or my dad maybe, and grandparents. Like, I wasn't alone. I would have had help if I needed it. But I thought, how cool would it be if I just played music to get home? So I busked on the streets of Thailand and got my way back home.
No way.
And I had already been, like, doing the Britney Rogers music handle, but it was, like, just, like, really unfortunate covers. And I just realized, I was like, you know what? People are more successful, and I mean success in a kind of a specific way here, but people are more successful when they're doing something they're really passionate about and they apply it to a deeper reason for like why they're here, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I'm super passionate about music, and my reason for being here is like to get to connect with humans and like get to empower myself and empower the people around me. Like, I think that's the goal, and you can do that anyway, but why not do it the way you're most passionate about? And if you can like connect those two, I think you can do really powerful things. You don't have to be the best. You just have to care, and you have to be your own drive. And I think, yeah, I don't know. So I'm not sure if I answered your question or if I derailed there, but I realized that was my passion and that was what I wanted to do no matter what. No one was going to stop me. No one had stopped me. People tried, didn't work. I was like, I'm going to sign up for music school and I'm going to do this thing.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome. That's super inspiring. And I think that's cool because there are so many avenues also in music that folks just don't realize. Like, I feel like you were talking about, some of the veil kind of comes down when you start to understand it, but then there's like functional roles that are jobs. Like, I remember sitting and listening to records and I didn't know what an engineer was or a producer or a session musician. Like, there really is a way. So I love that arc and whatnot. Yeah. you mentioned you only applied to one school, which was Berkeley, mm-hmm. right? So were you just like, I know I'm getting in? What was your confidence level like just making that pivot from I'm getting a math degree to I'm going to now go to school for music?
Yeah, I would, I don't know if you can relate to this, but I've always just kind of had this really strong intuition about certain things, and it only comes up when I know it's true. So I follow that, and I followed it to Thailand, and I followed it through a lot of the biggest moments of my life. And I have had a deep knowing, an unfounded confidence, you could say, that I was meant to do music even against all odds. I just knew, and I knew I was going to get into Berkeley. You know, that's kind of a tough thing to say. I also didn't feel like I was going to get in, the self-doubt, you know?
Right.
But I knew that's what I was going to do. Like, that's what was happening next. There was no plan B. There was no, you know, it's just like full force ahead. Like, this, if it's not this, another door will open, but I'm going to keep down this road until the right door opens. And yeah, when I got in, I have like a video of myself crying because I was like, I got into Berkeley.
Were you able to transfer credit? Sorry, this is just like the working in academia coming mm-hmm. up. Okay, cool. So you were able to say like, okay, here's my math degree. I'm going to transfer some of this over, and you didn't have to like start all the way over. Or you still kind of have to?
No, yeah, I did not get to transfer very many. I transferred like a class. I transferred my humanities, and I transferred my like a math credit. And I still had to take the math, I think. So I don't really know. I had to take basically the full degree. I think I got probably half a year off.
Okay.
By credits.
Being that it's so music focused, I'm assuming they're like, well, yeah, great, you did all this math, but you didn't take this music theory course or mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. Was that exciting though? Like, just do you have this fascinating like engineering brain too and math oriented brain when you dove in? Was like exciting, or what was that like once you got in? And I guess, can you speak a little bit to the pros and or cons of going into Berkeley and like pursuing the education side of it? Because that's really pulling back the veil on everything, music.
Yeah, I would love to talk about Berkeley because I feel like there is a strange, there's a strange conversation that happens around music school and specifically Berkeley, which is, I didn't need it. I could have done that myself. Mm-hmm. And just, I think that attitude alone, like, I get it, you know, but you're not going to do it. And that, the thing is that like, yeah, you can write down your lists and your schedules and whatever you want, but we're all human. And whatever way you need to push yourself, just, you know, be smart, like, about how you're working. Because, like, you don't want to push yourself to where you're, like, breaking down and burning out. You want to use your resources. And no one's self-made. Everybody has help along the way. But Berkeley, for me, was a really big, like, looking back is so amazing how they structured. Their online school is amazing. Yeah, I would say that, like, you think you're taking these classes that, like, okay, that's interesting or whatever. This, the stuff you learn in the beginning, it comes back in tenfold at the end. So a lot of my music production classes weren't towards the end. I actually didn't take a single music production class until, like, I think, like, my last four quarters. I didn't take a single music production class until then.
Wow.
Yeah, and I when that happened, I was like, man, I wish I had this class earlier. But truthfully, I wouldn't have been ready for it because, I mean, I was coming from a perspective of like listening to only the vocals in a song or only the lead instrument. I couldn't hear anything. Now I'm like, that reverb's pan to the left. Like, and this is because of ear training, and it does take time, and you don't realize what you're learning when you're learning it, and then what you're learning off. Like, if you're a musician, you're probably listening to music, is my assumption. You're studying. You don't know you're studying, but you're studying. And the more you hear and the more you can identify and like express to somebody else and like, in essence, teach back to somebody else, like, oh my gosh, this song is cool because this bass line's doing this. And every single moment, like outside of school and inside of school, was leading up to just like that. That was my teacher. It was just, you get as much as you put in, and no class is too silly. And you can learn something from anything. And by the time that I got to my mixing class, I didn't know what I was doing. This is towards the end, okay? I didn't know what I was doing. And I was like I know I didn't know what I was doing because I just made random decisions.
Yeah, nice.
And I was like, this could be good. I don't know. And I went and I did an internship with Paramount. And I talked with a really great engineer who was like in, he's like one of the radio guys, and he was talking about how, yeah, you just got to close your eyes and mix with your eyes, mix blindfolded. And he was talking about some lessons from Dave Pensado when Dave Pensado would literally say, close your eyes, and then he'd have to mix. And then they'd open their eyes and everything was like peaking and this was this, but it sounded good.
Mm.
And I think I just needed the permission to hear, like, trust yourself. And as soon as that happened, I swear to God, like, it all clicked. It all landed. I went from not knowing what I was doing halfway through this mixing class to all of a sudden turning in these mixes and my teacher being like, is somebody else mixing your homework?
Wow.
Yeah. It was crazy.
That's awesome. And so while you're going through that, obviously Berkeley's got a ton of resources, so that's going to be something that plays into that. But a better question may be, since Berkeley, what do you turn to if you are looking for resources? Do you have like a go-to spot of, okay, I need to figure out this thing? Where are you typically headed?
The internet.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, the best spot is like surround yourself with music nerds, you know? I did get to this point. I have all my like player friends, right? They didn't know what the heck I was talking about anymore because it was like all technical. And yeah, I think you find creative solutions. They have books available. I never opened a single one. Sorry. Sorry, Grandma, because she bought them. I definitely just, you find a way. And usually it's just by like listening and hearing what you like and then learning how to replicate that. I think that's really the magic right there. Like, try to replicate what you love and be honest with yourself when it's not there. And don't race to the finish of like, for instance, if you want to do a cover, right? I totally have this issue where I'm like, I just want to have this whole cover now. I want to be done. But if it's always better when I don't always do it, but I have to try, or I put it away for a day, I come back to it and I'm like, oh my God, I just sound better now. Like, it's nothing big changed. It's in the subtleties. I'm sorry, I think I derailed, but
no, that was perfect.
Yeah.
And so what was like your biggest takeaway, especially now that we're, you know, in this COVID world and you were in that like online community? What I found, and thanks to you, was how great the Berkeley online resources were, starting with like Coursera stuff and then into the actual curriculum. But the community's super active. How did that time with Berkeley influence how you interact with, say, folks in the music scene or locally or regionally or nationally or whatever?
Yeah, I would say you, again, get as much as you put into it. And there was a time where I was doing like, I was working 7 jobs and I had 5 classes. And I mean, I slept like 3 hours a night. And I mean, so I did not go to a single live chat for a while. But I don't regret it because I think every small little tiny detail leads you exactly where you're supposed to be. But I would say anybody going to Berkeley like yourself, that's going to start. The live chats are special. I did that for my capstone. I have a music business starting because of these 3 guys that were going to create a remote business together. And I wouldn't have met them or cared had I not gone to the live chats. I would have listened to their music maybe and just focused on my own submission. And it is just richer and better when it seems like it's not important, because they don't grade you, by the way, for live chats. That's not a participation thing. Discussions are, live chats are not. If you go to that, a lot of people aren't going to go, like myself and me and Phil, the guy who goes to Berkeley. That's a whole other story. But yeah, he and I were talking about like how he went to a lot of those live chats because he did it over 10 years, by the way. He did his degree over 10 years.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Phil's the OG.
Him.
Yeah.
The long haul.
Yeah. He did the long haul, and he said he went to every live chat and there was like very little people involved usually, but he would learn all the secrets. So I would say go to the live chats. Like, and if you can't handle the live chats because of the workload, lessen the workload. Like, you're not in a race to finish, and you probably will get more from the classes. That is the retrospective advice I would give. However, I would probably still do it the same way. So take it or leave it, you know? Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah. Did you become more partial, I guess, to collaborating remotely with folks in, or were you already, even maybe beforehand while in music, sending stuff over the internet or communicating with folks remotely?
Yeah, I would say, and I'll just like say it like this, because I think there are probably somebody who can relate to this, but I didn't think I was worthy of collaborating. So I think a lot of it was just like, keep your head down and work hard and don't poke up too far or people will know you're a fraud, you know? And I think that's imposter syndrome. And I think that's the creative experience a lot of the time. But I got to this point where I started recognizing the hard work and like the results from the hard work. And you really have to go back. You have to like document your progress, because that, if you are, it doesn't matter where you're at, if you've progressed, like if you can have notable progression and maybe even goalposts that you reach, then you know where you're going. It never ends, and you're never going to be the best, because there always will be somebody better unless you're Stevie Wonder. So it's like, yeah, I think now I'm super open. I'm like super excited to collaborate, because I feel like I worked hard to get to where I'm at, and I feel like I'm ready to offer something. I don't feel like I'm taking so much anymore. It's more of a collaborative thing. But I do think a lot of that's mental, like in your head, and it's just something people have to work through in their own time.
For sure. If you don't mind me asking, what do you think helped you kind of break that barrier? You mentioned, you know, recognizing the hard work, but I guess knocking down some of that imposter syndrome.
I would say the biggest thing is you can't measure talent to a certain extent, right? But you can measure the hours you put in. You can measure your progress. And I believe, and I love, so I teach kids, that's my background. So something I really believe in is giving authentic compliments rather than like pleasantries. So for instance, even the littlest kid, if they have a bunch of colors and they color all over the paper, if you say that's a great piece of art, you're lying.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's nice to say, but there's another thing. There's another way to do that. It can be like, those colors you used, that's really bright colors. I love the bright colors. Now that's authentic. And if you do that consistently with yourself and other people, then you have authentic confidence that you can build on. So like I'm here teaching math, right? No one likes math, and except for some of us, I guess, but no one comes to math because they want to, like, they're trying to pass their class, and they're mad at math. Math makes them feel bad, for various reasons that I don't think have to do with their intelligence. But anyways, yeah, I'm here trying to tell people you can do this. Like, I know it seems impossible, but like, if we just work on this together, step by step, we can get through it. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, I need to apply this to my own life. Like, yeah, I'm not Mariah Carey, but like, if I take these steps, these measurable small steps, and I just do it consistently for a long time, no one can take that kind of confidence away from you. That's yours. They can't take away the hours, the days, the years, nothing. And that confidence can't be broken.
For sure. And I saw those whistle tones on Instagram the other day. So I know you're putting in that work. Mariah, better watch out.
Mariah, listen to this, please. No.
How did that background then, diving into the production and whatnot, influence your songwriting? Did you feel it change, or did it?
Oh my God. Yeah. That question hit me like a delay. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I am so happy, Duncan. I'm so happy that I trusted my gut on not, like, it came from a place of, I don't want to pay somebody, because like as a broke college student, I don't want to pay somebody to do a track. So I'm going to learn how to do it myself. And that was the only goal, was to just be able to do my own tracks. And that was it. It was such a small goal that developed into something else. But like, now that I know what effect mixing has on the song, like, I thought it was just like, here's the song, and then they just make it polished and they send it out. It's not. Like, it's, everything's collaboration. You might think, like, as an artist, you might think that, like, this really taught me so much. It is all collaboration. If somebody puts a mix on it, if somebody produces, adds production to it, they are shaping the message of your song. And you have to really trust that person. And I wouldn't have known what the heck was good or bad back then. I would have just given it to somebody and just been like, that's probably fine. It's the song, right? I just hear the words and the melody, and that's it. Oh my God. Yeah, it shaped everything.
How did it shape, you brought up collaboration, then like co-writing, for example. So you're in Turtleneck, and you obviously had a background in solo stuff, but how did that then shape collaborating on, say, like the actual build of a song, where you're obviously working towards the same goal, but might have some different ideas.
I am a very like visual person. So I often like to structure things with like, it's kind of weird, but like graphs. So like, I'll kind of have an idea of like what a song should look like based off of like dynamics and in my head, like as colors. And so I'll like color it out and then, kind of share that idea. Or a lot of the time I really enjoy, because like, Alex is an amazing musician. Alex is the guitarist of Turtleneck, by the way. And Shai is the jazz pianist that came later. But Alex knows chords, and he also really likes the kind of style I like, which is he's like really far jazz and I'm like pretty far jazz pop. So I love pop music so much, and the blending of those styles is like my favorite. So I trust him with all of his chords, and he's just a everything. He's the best musician I've ever, like, I could go on about Alex for like ever. But anyways, having him put down the chords, and I can be like, oh no, I want the chord to do this. And I'll go like, or like throw out some note or like throw out some like emotion. I'm like, I want the chord to do this. And then we'll shape it together that way. But when it comes to melody and lyrics, that's all I could sit and write melody and lyrics all day long. All I need is a good chord bed. And I don't always know what to do with the chords, truthfully, but like he's got it. So he'll lay down the chords, then I'll lay down the lyrics and melody. Although I think I really want to have him like feature on a song, because his voice is like, I want him to take a few of the vocals too moving forward, because he's really like special. His vocals are special. But yeah, it's definitely a collaboration in that way. And then Shai comes in and just like sprinkles down some jazz piano, and it's really magical. If you let yourself, like if you let your ego go, it's really that. You just let your ego go and you let yourself be influenced and you let music do its job.
Ooh, I like that. Was it pretty natural sitting down, or what did that? You're the only person I know who had a music project start through Broken Bones. So do you want to walk through how Turtleneck actually came to be?
I thought you were going for a metaphor and I was like, Broken Bones, what does he mean? The quarantine? Like, Uh-oh. Oh, literally Broken Bones. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Alex and I, okay, this one's a little bit of a, like, it leads up to the story.
Oh, for sure.
Okay. So we met at the place I was studying math. We met there, and we were kind of like in a big friend group, but we never talked. And then one day he hit me up through Facebook and was like, let's get teriyaki. And I guess the rest was history. Have you ever just met like a soulmate? And I don't even mean that romantically. I just mean like friend soulmates. You just like, they just get it. And there's nothing at like you, it's your safe place. It's your family without blood. Like, yeah, that's Alex. And it has been consistently since I've ever met him. And so, he was really good at music from the, like, he's always been just like, what the heck good? Like, why aren't you signed good? Seriously. John Legend, John Mayer, like Prince, honestly, these are the people I would relate him to the most.
Wow. That's high praise.
It is. And it's like worthy of the praise. But he and I would hang out, and I would always compare myself like I want to get there one day. And we would always sing together. And he was so nice, because I sucked so bad. I listened back to those videos and I'm like, how did you're so good. You could have just ignored me or not let me, like, you could have put me down subtly. But no, it was always like, you got this. You have a voice in you that's going to roar one day. And like, it's coming. Like, he was the only one that really believed in me.
Yeah.
And anyways, yeah, we always played music, and I would always go to his shows, and he'd always come to mine when I started playing wineries and stuff like that and getting better over time. And one day I was taking a Krav test. It was the level 2 test, and it was a 4.5-hour test.
Whoa.
And in the first half hour, I broke my hand.
Oh no.
And in 3 places. And I knew it happened, but much like you were telling me earlier about powering through injuries,
yeah.
I just kept going. So I compounded it.
No.
Yeah. And but I passed. So yay.
Nice.
At least that, I guess. But I needed a fill-in. I had a show the next like day or two away, and he had to learn like a 3-hour set.
Wow.
And Alex was like, I can do it. It's fine. And, you know, he learned some of my songs, and then we also added some of his songs that I could sing. And yeah, I guess just collectively, I think our voices sound really good together, and people just liked our set better than like whenever we did solo. Like, we got a really good response from that, which is kind of unexpected. Cause again, I was like, I'm not worthy of playing with this guy. Like, like what? And, yeah. And then I guess when we had first met, I forgot to mention this at the beginning. This is why Turtleneck happened. When we first met, he came into my room, and saw that there was a giant turtle. I drew a giant turtle on my wall. Like giant, spent an entire night. I didn't sleep. I just drew an entire turtle on my wall, and turtles are like his symbol to him, that he's like in a safe place. And so that connected us because we both have a thing for turtles. And then throughout our friendship, I kept getting him turtle things. And I bought him this glass turtle necklace that was like, he was like, I will never buy one of these. It's too expensive. Like, I don't need to indulge in this, but it's the most beautiful art I've ever seen. And so I ignored him, quote unquote, ignored him. And then I bought it when he wasn't looking. And then I like surprised him for his birthday.
Oh, that's awesome.
So when we played the show, now it's all coming full circle. He had his necklace on. And then we just realized like we need to be in a band. And so I bought a matching necklace and now we're Turtleneck.
I love that name so much. That is a top tier name. And you have a song out.
Yes.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Or?
Sure. Yeah. It's called Worthwhile. And that was the moment, that was the first thing I mixed since I kind of had a mixing breakthrough that I told you about. So I did it in quarantine. So this is very fresh. And I was just like, I think I get it. Like, you know, there's never ending growth or whatever, but I understood something that I didn't understand before. And so like wrote that song and then mixed it and mastered it and all that stuff in like, I think I did most of the mixing in 4 days. It was just like something I had to make because I wanted to release it in quarantine, like at the beginning when the feelings were raw, because the song is about, the song is about getting out of bed in the morning when there's a pandemic and when there is a re-revolution in process and when the world is clearly suffering and there's just nothing you can really do to, you know, you just got to get up and you got to like find a reason to smile or something, or you're going to go crazy. You're stuck in a house with all of this information. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to do something. So that's what that song's about. Yeah.
I love what you said about doing it while it was fresh, because I feel that big time when you've got a song and it's like you feel the energy of it and you're like, I know I need to capture this thing. And if you sit on or have to rely on someone else and they're sitting on it kind of thing, it always like, I feel like it can lose that energy. So that's very cool. I think a lot of people will relate to that. And so now that you have the project, are y'all, well, I know y'all are working on solo stuff too. So how do you balance that then of being in like the same household and going, okay, we've got this project together, I'm writing. How do you go, okay, this one's for my project over here, this one's gonna be Turtleneck. Like, how does that work out?
Well, I think quarantine really, we started Turtleneck right before quarantine. So like quarantine really, cause then Shai joined the band and we had our first gig lined up and it got canceled. So I released the song and then the gig was happening. And this was right as the shutdown happened. So we actually bowed out right before they shut it down. Cause we were like, I don't know if this is a good idea. And then sure enough, it was like no music venues, no bars, blah, blah, blah. So then Shai couldn't come over cause he lives with his parents and we didn't want to risk anything like that. So Alex and I just kind of, we did a few covers as Turtleneck and said like, Shai will be back soon. But then as we all know, quarantine lasted way longer than anyone expected. So we paused. But I had 3 songs written for Turtleneck, and we produced one. And the other 2 I started producing anyways, with Alex's guitar and with my vocals. And then we brought Shai in after quarantine passed for a while, and he laid down some piano tracks right before a protest and then went out to protest. It was actually really fucking cool. I was like, Shai, you're the best. Anyways,
nice.
He's like, I'm going to go protest Black Lives Matter, but also here's a jazz piano. Okay, bye.
Yeah.
Nice. And so those songs are being I'm in the middle of finishing up those productions. And then Alex has his songs that he's always written. And then I got to produce him for my final capstone project. And then I became somebody else's final capstone project, and am producing that EP as well. So it's, there's like a few projects happening simultaneously, but like they're all informing each other.
Right.
So it's kind of cool. Yeah, I feel like it's pretty, Alex's style is so like bluesy, R&B, jazz. And like mine's kind of pop, folk, jazz-ish, whatever over here. And then like Turtleneck is jazz pop. So I feel like it doesn't bleed too badly, but.
Gotcha. So do you know kind of early on then, or I guess I should ask, how do you typically write it? I think you kind of alluded to this. Is it more you get the chords down and write to those and that'll probably determine which direction you're going with said song?
Yeah, I think most of the time that I've written very few songs. It's happened, but I've written very few songs by just singing first and then putting chords down.
Same.
I feel like it feels like what Victor Wooten said, which was that, do what the song's asking you to do. Like, I don't know. I feel like music exists already. Like, yeah, it's already beautiful and it's already there, and there's not really creating. There's just using what is there and making something beautiful. You know, I don't know if that's, that was pretty cheesy, but
no, I feel that. I think it's tough because when I started working with Aaron, I started to really see the world of production. I was like, oh, I need to dive headfirst into all of this. And what I've realized lately is a lot of the stuff we've gone back to is kind of my more singer, like I'll sit on the couch here and play the acoustic guitar and write to it. And I'm bringing a lot of those songs to him, and it's just building around that versus like, we need a huge beat and sense, and that comes into play. But mm-hmm. I like what you're saying. If it's like, it's already there, just do what's best for it. Instead of like, I want to just impose a bunch of stuff. And very few of those songs, if any, made it all the way through to the end.
Yeah,
I feel that.
So very few of the singer songwriter songs made it to the end, or the very few of the synthy ones.
Well, just any song that I tried to impose stuff on top of.
Yes.
Where I was like,
okay,
like I've got like the songs that were just like written in full, like with the acoustic guitar, I've got the melodies. Those always make it to the end. The ones that struggled or just didn't end up working out, as far as like the final vision was, okay, cool, I'm imagining all this crazy stuff, and it's like, that's not what you wrote. You wrote a blues track. Why are you trying to do this thing over here?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I like what you were saying about just like uncovering what's meant for the song, because it's, I think when you do write it and you capture that energy, it's pretty clear. Not always clear, but the foundation's there. And if you follow that, you're going to build something pretty beautiful.
Yeah, I always feel like, and of course this is coming from, you know, just my brain, so take it with a grain of salt, but I always feel like the most beautiful and impactful music, just from what I've observed, is always kind of like a minimalist approach. For instance, Gravity by John Mayer. He can do so much, but he chose this really simple melody and this really simple, like, rhythm and this really simple guitar. You know, it's not simple, like, I mean, like, I'm not gonna pull up, you know, just jam on Gravity for the first time and be like, yeah, got it. But yeah, he chose an open and simple approach to something he could have made complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like minimalism in music is where it's at. Like, if you're doing things because you think it will sound cool versus with intention, like, you can, there's a lot of okay, good songs.
Yeah.
Like, that's most of music, right?
Yeah.
And there's some songs that just, like, for instance, oh my gosh. Okay, so David Foster, for anybody who doesn't know, is, like, an amazing producer, right? He's, like, why Celine Dion exists in our ears today. He wrote all of those songs and helped her get to the place where she could actually sing. She was not singing in English when he met her. He was just like, you have a voice, we're going to do this. And he's the reason that I Will Always Love You, Whitney Houston, is the way that it is. So on his first mix, very simple mix, he was like, okay, so here's the idea. Sent it over to Clyde Davis, another amazing producer. And Clyde and him had an argument. They're like, Clyde was like, I am not, or David Foster's like, this is the first mix, you know, but this is the idea. I'm going to add this and this and this and this. It needs real strings. It needs a tuned saxophone. It needs blah, 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 right? Clyde was like, we're going to hang up before we say something we regret. And then he sent it in. And that was the final. He used the first mix, the most simple mix, because sometimes songs just speak for themselves. And if you try to, like you said, impose your own, like, oh, this worked in this, or like, this is the cool thing, or this is the best synth, so we need to use it here. If you're not using your ears and your intuition, I think you'll have a pretty okay, good song.
Mm-hmm. I like a pretty good, okay, good song.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. That's what I'm going to brand myself as. It's like, how's your music? It's pretty okay, good.
No, your music's amazing.
Oh, that's very good.
I've really enjoyed listening. Like, that's why when you guys asked, do you want to do a podcast together? You know, I'm not just going to willy-nilly jump into random things. Unless I do.
Yeah. You're like, except for all the other times, but
yeah, right, yeah. I was like, well, I knew Aaron's music, and I was like, his production, like, he's a really good mixer and very inspiring, and I was like, oh, he probably surrounds himself with some good musicians. And then I listened to your stuff and I was like, okay. Okay, Duncan, I hear you. You rock acoustic, like, yes.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm very excited about Fine Tune. That's something that I'm not sure if it'll be out by that time, but we've got the socials up And that's going to be something very exciting, just like a lot of great brains together. So I'm very thrilled that you were part of it too, because I remember, I think Worthwhile had just come out when we got introduced. And I remember being like, what in the world is going on here? And, you know, and Aaron was very complimentary as well. So I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it was very much like super talented. You got to hear her engineering, like got a great ear, and then saw the whistle tones recently. But I saw obviously you singing. It, like I said at the beginning, it just blew my mind that anyone could have been like, yeah, you're making the dogs bark kind of thing. Like that just
it makes it better in a way.
Yeah.
Like I'm glad that's where I started.
Right. There is something to be said for that, of being able to look back and go, like you were talking about that tangible growth, I think is so important. Like that's like the exciting part. It's almost exciting to like, it's good if you look back and go, oh, I'm so much better now. If you're like, wow, those were the days, you like might actually be going backwards. Who knows?
Right. And I feel like Brene Brown says this really well. And it's like a philosophical tangent, but she says like, you can't be courageous without being vulnerable. And I feel like living a courageous life is such a beautiful sentiment. And yeah, in order to, you have to be brave enough to suck at something
Mm-hmm.
And I think you don't have to, like people sometimes stop because they're like, I have to be professional to be an artist. It's like, whether or not you're going, like you want to go anywhere with it, it is enough just to create. That's mm-hmm. it. And then if something comes from it, and if you push yourself and you have something to look back on and see like, yep, I did that, then that's cool. But yeah. Like, even if all you did was just like sing into the atmosphere, you did something really unique and special. Like you experienced something that a lot of people just never let themselves. So
speaking of which, do you want to outline what you've got coming up? So I know you mentioned kind of the 3-song EP. Do you want to outline what people can look forward to from you in the next couple months here? And then I have some rapid fire questions for you, but I want to make sure we're able to plug all the stuff you've got going on. And all the kind of service, people can hire you too. You do a lot of amazing work that we've been talking about, and I guess we should plug that too.
Sure. Yeah, I have in the next few months, I would say that I'm working on an EP for my solo project, and it's going to be about like a metamorphosis, kind of like letting go and coming into yourself. And then I'm working on Alex's EP right now, which, oh my God, guys, you are not ready for this dude's voice. It's unreal. Like, he's one of those people that can just like stay there with the guitar and the voice only, and you got it. So his music's coming out, and I'm really excited about that. And his EP is about appreciation, and it moves through watching people that he loved die, to realizing that he wished he said I love you more, to like coming full circle and appreciating the people closest to him. So it's good stuff. And then Turtleneck is going to release their EP, which is really exciting. And so working on that, and they're basically done. Like all I have to do, I had to focus on school up until this Sunday. I'm graduating, but I had to focus on school.
Congrats.
Thank you. I don't even know how that's going to feel yet, but yeah, Turtleneck's almost done. And yeah, so I'm starting a production company, with Phil Melton, who is from Berkeley, and we have a studio space and everything. So if anybody needs any work done, you can check out Worthwhile. You can check out the EP I'm going to release, the EP for Alex, and you know the EP for Turtleneck coming up in these next few months if you want to hear a sound of what that will look like. But yeah, we offer production, mixing, arranging, background vocals, drums, bass, guitar, anything you need, we can throw it in there. And then album art, if you want it, I do a little bit of that as well. So,
and by a little bit, she means amazing art that is on, is it Brit Makes Art?
Yeah. I decided
on Insta?
decided to make another Instagram. Yep. Of the art page. Yep.
Cool. And what's the name of the production company? Do you have a name yet?
We don't. So this is
TBD.
TBD. Maybe we'll just name it TBD. I told Phil, his last name's Melton. I was like, let's call it the Melton Pot. And he was like, literally never. No.
Oh, what? I was like, that's good.
I'm like, damn, this is marketing genius over here. You're gonna let this slide?
That is really good. Thank you so much for taking the time. Before I let you go, I just have some rapid fire questions before I let you get out of here. So I'm going to give you two options. What is the name of that DAW you've been talking about?
Dog. What dog?
D-A-W, sorry.
Oh, dog. The, yeah.
I'm sure there's been wonderful dogs as
well. I'm like, dog? I want to pet a dog.
You were talking about being like the best of between like Logic and...
Oh, okay. So I have to preface this with, I've been going between Logic and Pro Tools. Mm-hmm. Okay, like pretty hardcore. And they both have really special qualities about them. And I think anybody who has used Pro Tools will be like, yeah, the MIDI is so bad. But Luna, which, I mean, you have to work through, I think, Universal Audio and everything, but they worked on their own, like the engineers there worked on their own DAW. And I think they're on their way to creating something that is just, I mean, it's already out. But I feel that that is going to be the marriage right there. Luna. And I haven't gone into it yet. I've just looked into it. So I have not even played with it yet. But I am so excited because Phil actually downloaded it. And we're going to look into it together because it might just be the answer. Or an easier way. And also just knowing more DAWs, why not? It's so fun.
I barely know one. And I know how to hit record in this one. So, wow, three DAWs though. I guess on that note, Pro Tools or Logic?
Both. I want to compose in Logic, so I'll do all of my... I did the entire Ariana sound-alike thing. I did that all with basic Logic plugins. I did not use a single synth outside of Logic. Really? I just layered them until it sounded right. And then I also detuned my vocals for like the... did that and then like detuned it with little Ultra Boy. But other than that, yeah, Logic synths. And even like I used a lot of the Logic drums to create... Like there's some good... Logic has good loops and samples, like... Dear goodness. And Pro Tools is amazing for mixing. It's so easy and just so intuitive and fun. So I can't decide. I would have to say Logic if you're gonna start something. But I'm tied to Pro Tools because it was my first BB. But I would say Logic is right there. So
right on. Well, going between the two covers you've released, which artist do you prefer, Ariana Grande or Billie Eilish?
Okay, I no disrespect, Billie, but like holy. Oh my God, Ariana's voice. She is all the goals. Like the reason I chose that song to try to replicate, which is a very difficult production and it took way too many hours, but the reason I chose it and went through that was because I want to learn how to sing like her. So I'm like, hey, if you try to replicate her song, maybe you'll get closer. So that is Ariana all the way. I can't with her voice. Like where does that come from?
It's insane. Do you enjoy producing your own material? Wow. I can't speak, apparently. Your own material or that of others?
Man, both. I just love it. Anything music, if I can just be in a studio and get in that place where you just don't come up until the sun rises, but you don't know because the studio's dark, so you just think that you're constantly in the same time of day. It's beautiful. Anyways, all I need is music. I don't care really where it comes from. I just need to, like... be around it. Yeah,
for sure. Lyrics or melody when you're writing, what do you prefer if you had to pick one?
Oh, definitely melody. Yeah, because I feel like creating melody is important, because if you can create a catchy melody, that is not just in singing, like vocals is very important, but like creating it in the string parts in the background, or like being intentional with melody and like having melody pop in sparse places. And Into You does a great job of that. Like Max Martin really finessed the heck out of that song by like just adding in those like little whether it was a reverb tail that went over like a background ad lib at the most perfect time. Creating melody, yeah, because you can do it with anything. Versus lyrics, it's just there you have it. Right. Somebody will connect with it or not.
You already kind of addressed a lot of this, but I like to close with like this big three at the end, which is, and again, I guess I'll just ask this, like, why do you make music?
I love that question. Somebody asked me that once on a hike. And I realized how important that question was. I hadn't gotten into Berkeley yet, but I was applying. And I was like, you know, Steve Jobs said, if you don't have a why, then you're, I mean, he didn't say it like this, so forgive me, but you're screwed. And so I was like, I need to know. I need to have this answer. So I have an answer. I would say there are like a few main reasons. And the reason being is being an avenue for somebody to go deeper into themselves. I think it's really important to feel your feelings and to acknowledge like who you are, why you are, why you're the way you are. And those questions are hard, but music is like a commonality, and people don't always know why they're brought to it or why they are emotionally affected, but it's an avenue to exploring yourself, even if it's passive. And then two, because I mean, I just got to sing. Like, yeah. No matter what, I just have to sing. And then three, because I don't want to do anything with my life that feels like I'm stagnant or, but you can't with music. No matter how good you get at one thing, guess what? There's a whole other instrument. And oh, you learned all the instruments. Okay, cool. So here's DAW number one. Here's DAW number two. Oh, you learned all the DAWs. Okay, well, here's music production and here's creating signal flow and here's, it never ends.
Yeah.
You just, yeah. So, I mean, you can never get bored.
It's like worlds upon worlds and like you, 100%. What do you hope people get out of your music?
A sense of realistic optimism.
Oh, I like that. And then we've kind of gone through your journey here. What would you tell your younger self?
I would say, hell yeah, kid, keep going.
Love it. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. This is a blast. I'm so excited to hear all the projects you're working on. I'm excited to collab with you on Fine Tuned, and I'm super inspired. So thank you so much for taking the time. And we'll be sure to plug all the stuff you've got. You got a lot coming out in the next couple months. I'll be sure to plug all this, of course, on my personal stuff. We'll get it on the Made for Music channels, all that.
Thank you so much, Duncan. And it's really exciting to be able to have these conversations with a musician I really admire and respect. So.
Oh, you're too kind. The sentiment is mutual. Cheers.
Cheerio.
Every night I lie awake. Another day, the forecast calls for rain, but I still shine. So I've gotta leave this storm behind. Every day I choose to break a smile.
Another day.
That was Worthwhile by Turtleneck. Be sure to go stream and purchase that song, follow them on socials, and show them some love. As well, tune into Brit's live stream on December 19th at 6 p.m. for Abundance of Hope. Also, in the new year, we will be releasing a new podcast called Fine Tuned, which has socials up now. It's going to be with a couple other artists and producers in the area. We think it's going to be a really great way to break down some of your favorite songs and introduce you to some songs you may not have heard of. So really excited about that. And as always, if you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made For Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. Truly appreciate that extra effort, and I will see y'all next time.